You're listening to Hooked on Startups, where every week you'll hear from some of the most talented, inspiring, and successful entrepreneurs who share their real life stories, how they overcame challenges and failures, and how they mastered success. Get ready for some of the best business tips, tricks and tactics, and some frank, unscripted discussions. Here's your host, Matthew Sullivan.
On today's episode of Hooked on Startups, I have none other than Robert Klinkenbeard. And Robert used to play rugby and then did a lot of gardening and then decided that it would be much better doing something else. I mean, I've got your list here of your achievements, which is frankly far too long. you seem to have crammed too much into a lifetime. So you're obviously greedy. You're taking away from other people. You're being too successful.
I'm an overachiever.
Well, but I think we just need to talk about the rugby thing more than anything else, actually.
Yeah, what top are you wearing? I love it.
Well, this is my in deference to both you and the game.
Okay.
I've dug out of my wardrobe, which is a closet over here.
Right.
I'm not sure if anyone will understand a word we're saying on this.
No, we should just throw in different words as we go through this.
You know, confuse people with English. But no, I used to play rugby for Crowborough, which is this sort of town in Kent.
Okay.
So I was part of the sort of, if there is a Z team, but I was one of the old farts playing. So I used to be a coach for my sort of the under nines because I couldn't do anything more than that because it got, you know, they would rumble me. And I sort of started playing again. I used to play it at school and I picked it up again and stopped when this sort of 21-year-old giant decided to try and sort of throw me headfirst in the ground. And it took me about a month to recover. But I kept the jersey.
No, I love it. I mean, yeah, you don't tell people that you play for the Z team. You just play them telling you play rugby.
I'm learning already. But this is between you and me.
Yeah.
This is between you and me and our listener.
Perfect. No, I love playing rugby. I tell people that rugby is one of the few sports that you could turn up at any rugby club around the world and suddenly you have 15, 20 new friends. They'll put you up in their house, you know, they'll set you up with a job. And there's very few sports have that type of culture and that community.
Yes. It's like going into battle, isn't it, for 80 minutes?
Yeah, it's true. And then you shake hands with them and then you have a pint.
Yeah, I tell you, some of the memories. I mean, and I think we used to play on Saturday mornings. And the idea is you would turn up as overhung as possible. And people would be sitting there drinking vodka Red Bulls before the match just to get some sort of pulse going again.
Yep.
And the other thing I remember is, you know, you go back into the changing room and then the first thing the guys would do would break out a pack of Marlboro Reds and then just sort of, you know, inhale an entire cigarette. And, you know, just those were the days.
And then did you ever experience the shared deep baths?
Yeah, we had showers in our place, which were always cold.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, the bath's always good fun, actually, normally for sort of seeing how long people could hold their breath when you sort of sat on them underwater.
Yeah, and then this layer of dirt is just...
That's all part of it. the thing was forgetting... I'm sorry to all of the people listening to this. I mean, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter because there's probably three listeners now anyway. So, and they've gone off to make a cup of tea or something. So, it was. And it's funny, the things you say, because there's this piece on your website about rugby, and it is absolutely true because you cannot hide. You can't make excuses. And you do stick out like a sore thumb if you're not performing. And it's amazing if you then bring that across to a business which you run, it's kind of the same thing. But if you manage to find yourself in a big organization, you kind of can hide and, you know, say...
Yeah, that's true. And you can hide a big organization. And, you know, I think if you don't go in with the right techniques, whether it be in business or in sport, then inevitably you're going to get hurt one way or another.
So your story is quite interesting because I will probably get it completely wrong. So please, you know, correct me. But you built a business with a huge turnover, 350 employees in a pretty competitive, aggressive, difficult area. So I would imagine you started very small and probably didn't imagine that you would end up with, you know, five locations, 350 employees and all of the sort of learning that needs to go with that. So is what you're doing now a result of that sort of rapid learning by experience process that you went through with your landscaping business?
Yeah, you're right. I mean, I started off in a garage or a lockup, as I see over here. And yeah, I didn't have a clue when I was first starting. We were starting early in the morning. But, you know, I think part of the reason why I do my coaching now is because I want people to quickly learn all the things, all the mistakes that I made through life.
Yeah.
So if I'm able to give back and hopefully people make less mistakes because they listen to me, then, you know, that's, I feel as though I'm achieving my goal.
That's quite a challenge because, as everyone knows, you know, people only learn by experience. So it's actually quite difficult to get people to, I mean, people love going to courses and people love going to sort of education. I'm not sure if they actually manage to take anything away from it. So the real challenge is actually trying to do something which people actually act on, whether it's investment advice or coaching or mentoring or, I mean, what are the biggest things that you've noticed when you're delivering pearls of wisdom, you know, to people that have probably paid, you know, a fair amount to listen to you and want to get the advice?
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of people come to either my events or my meetings and they'll take pages of notes away. And I stopped them at the end. I said, that's great. You've written all these notes, but I only want you to apply one or two things really well over the next 90 days. I don't want you to try and achieve all these things. Just yes. Work on two or three of those things, these two or three of these nuggets, and go deep and do them really, really well. And then come back and just work on the next two or three things.
And so is it harder doing this than it was running a business?
Obviously running a business was challenging. I mean, you know, I think a lot of people now are seeing the challenges with hiring people.
Yes.
And that's part of the reason why I got out of it, was just because I could see that coming down the horizon, which is really tough to try and find people. So, you know, initially it was cash flow issues, and then it was finding the right people that moved into the management level. And then towards the end, it was really finding laborers. I mean, I think the year before I sold, we were down sometimes 40, 50 people, which is really tough to try and keep.
Yeah, which means the jobs run late and you have upset customers.
Quality is terrible, and yeah, it's really tough.
But it's a very different business, the business that you're in now, because there are all sorts of challenges with the business that you were in. But when it works, you get that huge sense of satisfaction.
Yeah.
Does that work the same way when you're trying to, you're sort of distancing because you haven't got control over these people's lives? When you're running a business, you have control. So does that lack of control lead to, you know, not a lack of fulfillment, but does it give you the same sort of buzz when you finish the day?
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of days I am frustrated because I feel as though they haven't listened to me. But I try and shake that off and I try and look at the bigger picture and I'll reflect back over the last 6 months or year. So if I've seen them make progress over the year in terms of either increasing the revenue, increasing the profit, then I still feel as though they're moving the needle. But when I go into a client, you know, back to back, you know, month to month, and I still see them struggling with those same issues, they're still very much in the weeds. You know, it could definitely get frustrating. It's funny because they even had the point, they could see the frustration all over my face. And they've even, almost, I would say on a monthly basis, I'll have people say, well, why don't you just come and work here part-time? Why don't you take over part of the business? And, you know.
So in some respects, I mean, it's funny because there is this perception that there are so many people out there, you know, providing training and coaching and courses, but it's incredibly difficult to be good at it. And, you know, everything that I read and have seen about you indicates that you are good at it. And the question is this more of a challenge in terms of actually than you thought it would be? So to actually be good at this, because you strike me as the sort of person that wouldn't want to start something and then just drop it and try something else.
So determined.
Yes. So is this more, is it trying to educate people, trying to guide people? Is that actually far harder in reality than running your own business over something you've got more control?
No, yeah, I would say absolutely, 100%. And I think going into the coaching, I thought that everybody would just automatically listen and do to everything I said because I had that experience. But that's, you know, and owners have, they've all got an ego. They all think they know the right thing. So it usually takes a while.
But you need that as an entrepreneur, though, don't you? You need sort of ego and sense of, I'm the only one who knows how to do this.
It's true. You do need that. But, you know, I usually just take some satisfaction away from helping them, hold them accountable, just be that thorn in their side, just tell them things they don't necessarily want to hear.
Exactly. You know, and that's the hard thing. So it is to be good at this is actually much harder than most people think, because I think what you can do, and I've seen this over and over again, where people will deliver a pre-scripted course, which may have no relevance to the person. And, you know, I read that you're a real estate investor, you run peer groups, and I think that's all sort of connected. But is there this sort of central mindset that you feel that you have that is lacking? And is that what you're teaching? Is it this sort of approach as opposed to the technicalities of the job? Is that the common thread with all of the people that you work with?
No, I think you've hit the nail on the head right there. Yeah, I can go in and tell them and do my scaling up or my EOS guidelines and principles, but definitely the mindset part is key to everything I teach people, because everybody knows we all face challenges every single day in life, whether it be business challenges, whether it be personal challenges, family challenges. We're all hit. People are always trying to knock us down. And it's really how you react to that, how you get back up after being knocked down. And I think that's where that, you know, the Scottish determination, I think that going into doing all my races, going into doing my businesses, I used to drive into my work and it'd be like 100 trucks sitting there at the end of the day. And yeah, I could take the mindset of getting really upset by seeing dents in the trucks and a mess everywhere and everything untidy. Or I take the mindset of, okay, well, I'll deal with that tomorrow, but I'm going to go and talk to my next prospect. I'm going to try and get my next job. How can I improve the overall company? How can I get that 1% better? So just a little bit different mindset.
And you mentioned a key word, I think, which is determination. And that's a common thread. So, you know, an Ironman triathlon, I think, is one of the hardest one-day races. I mean, I had to stop after my sort of seventh. My knees just couldn't do it anymore. Right. I mean, I watched seven of them on TV and I had kept getting up to get more coffee. So that's
I love it.
You have a marathon, there's a rather long bike ride as well, and probably a bit of swimming involved.
Yeah. And you know, you start off with their 2.5 mile swim and then you jump on a bike for 100.
Do you get to change or do you have to,
But you know yourself, if you're wet from swim and you're trying to peel off and put on clothes, it's like brutal.
You jump
on a bike for 112 miles, you know, it takes, you know, 5-ish hours, and then you strip again and you jump into your running gear and you run a marathon. But, you know, it's a long day, you know, when you're faced with weather challenges, nutrition issues, bathroom issues.
Yeah, I was going to say, but the only thing you're up against is yourself, really.
Yeah, you are. Apart from the swim, you know, swim is, it's almost like a scrum in rugby.
Yes.
Everybody's beating the crap out of each other with their elbows and their legs, and goggles are flying everywhere. So, you know, that's a challenge, especially for me. I'm not a swimmer, you know, again, big rugby guy.
Yeah.
And could swim one length, and here I am jumping into this, the sea or a lake, and trying to swim against 2,400 other people. It's brutal.
I think that's a lot of what business owners, I'm not sure if they run out of determination or they forget why they're doing it. Because, you know, it's a question that a lot of people ask entrepreneurs, you know, what's the biggest lesson you've learned? I think the common thread just seems to be this concept of just don't give up. Just don't let failure or whatever you want to call it, you know, bad days or a snotty email from a customer or something like that, as you say, or dents in your trucks.
Yeah.
But I think you've taken that to a much greater degree. So rather than just, you know, sort of build this thing. So where do you see this sort of, is it a coaching program that, do you see that expanding, or are you going to bring in other elements? Because there's obviously you, but do you find that there are other psychological elements that you uncover that you would love to be able to sort of bring in?
Yeah, you know, as I've gone into the coaching, I've definitely gone different directions, and I've now expanded my team, because as I go into companies, I'll realize that they have some challenges in different areas. Maybe they're struggling in the financial part. So I now have a financial, a fractional CFO. I now have a recruitment person who helps fulfill, placement of people. I have a leadership coach who helps me with if people are needing some leadership development. So, and I think for me personally, I think I've moved more into working with people to become higher performing.
Yeah.
Because I feel as though people only perform at 40, 50% of their capacity.
Oh, if that, I think, really.
Yeah. And is it funny? I was on a call last week with a bunch of entrepreneurs from around Europe, and I did a poll at the beginning, and you know, all of these are high accomplished people, and they were still rating themselves to that 40, 50%. And when I dug a little bit deeper, a lot of them don't necessarily plan their day. They don't set many goals during the day. They get caught up in social media. So there's so many things that they tend to get pulled in different directions. A lot of them live their life by, or their daily schedule through their inbox.
Yep.
And they're pulled in different directions.
Sort of reacting as opposed to...
Yeah.
Sort of defining the policy.
So I've been, I suppose, been more focusing on trying to make sure people are better organized, more intentional on a daily basis, and really become just, again, celebrate those little wins along the way. Because you're right, I think a lot of people get knocked back every day by crappy customers. They get bad emails. Maybe
What are the worst habits that you see that are most common that are easiest to fix? So if, I mean, for anyone that's listening.
I would say a lack of daily huddles. I'm a huge fan of in the morning, just have a quick 10-15 huddle with your team. And the second thing is having real planned out meetings with your team. Nothing that drags on for an hour and a half, 2 hours, and it's unstructured. But really, you know, you look at your numbers, you look at the issues, even try and do them stand up so they're quicker.
Yep.
So I'm more a fan of having quicker, more intentional meetings.
And what's the other bad? You mentioned, I talk about bad habits. You mentioned being driven by your inbox. I think there was Tony C, the guy who sadly passed away, who was the founder of Zappos.
Yeah.
Had this great idea. I think it was called the Tomorrow Box or something like that. Or Yesterbox or something like that, where anything that was that he felt that didn't need a an immediate answer, he would just push that and deal with it tomorrow. Or and do you find that there are some commonalities across entrepreneurs as a group, whether it's they're reacting because they're afraid of their position? And I think this ties into what you were saying with your European friends who were rating themselves perhaps lower than they really were. So there's that sense of, what is it, imposter syndrome, that even though you're doing well, you think you're doing really badly.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I mean, I think I don't feel as though people go into their daily routines being intentional and being setting themselves goals. So I love people who either at the beginning of the day or even the night before just set up 3 to 4 small goals that they're going to focus on.
Yep.
And make sure they're revisiting those goals during the day so they're not getting pulled in different directions by other people. And then tied in with that, to help achieve those goals, set aside what I call quality time blocks. So if you could set aside a couple of hours a day or 2 1-hour blocks to allow you to really focus on the things that are going to move the needle within your company.
Yes.
I've seen that having huge results.
Yeah, and I think that's absolutely right. I'm just thinking about myself. I mean, you do try and every morning just think, what am I going to do today that is actually going to move the business forwards? You know, at the end of the day, I sort of try and have a recap. I hope this isn't a confessional, Robert. but you try and have a recap. Like, have I actually done, what have I done today? And actually you go through, right, I've done this. Let's move that forwards. That's moved that forwards. That's moved along a bit. That's clicked forwards a bit. Because I think the reality is the real advantage that you have is having been through this sort of sporting background and this intense competitive, Ironman challenges that you've done over and over again, the training for that has to have an outcome. In other words, if you have an Ironman challenge in 4 weeks' time, you can't just go down the pub every night and think that I'll, you know, and I'll cram in the night before. You know, every day you have to have, you know, I'm talking as if I know what I'm talking about, but I'm imagining here.
You sound good, though.
It does, doesn't it? my whole life is about that. I, you know, work well when under pressure and cornered like a rat in a trap. So you need to have that sort of incremental growth. Otherwise, you just don't get there. So bringing that training, you know, mindset. I just want to say, what other areas of business that you mentioned, real estate investing and the peer groups, and what other things are you involved with? Or does this take up all of your time?
Yeah, it takes up a fair amount of my time between the coaching. You know, I have 9 peer groups that are based all around the US. And
there's like sort of mastermind groups.
They're like mastermind groups, and, you know, mainly in the green industry, you know, landscape, pest control, tree companies. So they, you know, it's almost like acts as that board of directors. So I'll go and facilitate those meetings or benchmark them. But then the other coaching people I work with, is it could be all over the spectrum. I have distributors, plumbing companies, different contractors, real estate.
Yeah.
And a lot of them, even though they're different market segments, they all have similar challenges. They all have challenges with either, you know, the cash flow. People is probably the biggest thing. You know, when I go into a company, I typically see that they don't necessarily have the right people or the right training of the people they have to take the company to the next level.
And again, most of these businesses, I would imagine, have grown organically. In other words, they've started with that driven individual who hasn't had training. I mean, he's an excellent landscaper, knows that business inside out, or whatever part of the green industry you work with. But when it comes to human resources, financing, marketing, you know, growth, managing those things, that can be overwhelming. So I suppose the support that you bring could be incredibly important to some of these people.
Yeah, no, the support and almost like that confidence to be able to jump to that next level, because, you know, some crazy statistic that only 4% of companies that start only get over $1 million.
Yeah.
And I love it just because they don't necessarily have the skill set or confidence or the some of the structure to take the company to the next level. So whether it's to bring in a coach or some type of expert, mentor, or I was a big part of a group called Entrepreneurs Organization, EO.
Yeah.
And again, that was really instrumental for me growing my business and learn from other business owners.
Yeah.
So, you know, I talk about that in my book where, you know, whether you're doing training for triathlons or in business, you have to surround yourself with other experts.
Yeah.
To help alleviate some of the weaknesses that we all have.
Exactly. And tell us more about the book and what drove you to write that. And, you know, what are some of the key messages that someone will pick up when they get it?
Yeah, I mean, writing a book was always on my book bucket list. My dad is actually a Presbyterian minister back in Edinburgh. He'd written 4 or 5 books. So I just had this desire to make my dad proud, I suppose. So when I sold the business, I tried to figure out what am I going to write about. And I just finished my 4th Ironman. And I started just to piece together the similarities between business and Ironman races, where, you know, every business should have a strategic plan.
Yes.
Where's the company going in the future? And it's similar to a triathlon. Again, you're not going to do a triathlon in 4 weeks. You're going to plan that out to 6 months, a year from now, and then you have to build a plan to be able to get there.
Yes.
So I started talking about that and trying to break it down per quarter, per month, surround yourself with the right people.
But you, again, sorry to interrupt, but you would never plan that sort of event without the help of other people.
Absolutely.
Yet, entrepreneurs dive in, you know.
Yeah, that's true.
Head
You're
first.
Right. You're right.
And it's a far more complex, in some respects, you know, thing to run a business, because you've got so many more moving parts. But the book, which is called Ironman Mindset, we'll put some links at the end. You can really see the parallels there. And you must have some real sort of, you know, light bulb moments from people that you're working with when they suddenly realize, oh my God, I've been doing it. I've been so stupid over the last 10 years. Why? Why on earth have I done it this way? So,
yeah, light bulb moments, meaning a lot of it is around people.
Yes.
Maybe the people they've had working for them are not necessarily the right people to take them to the next level. They've not necessarily had any goals. set for the people below them, or KPIs or any type of metrics to push them. A lot of people, owners especially, will, I feel, enable the team that works below them because they're so hands-on and trying to keep control of the business, whereas a lot of them are actually have that desire to level up, to go to that next level. So just changing the mindset from when somebody comes into your room asking for advice, which I used to be, I had that ego where I used to be that go-to guy and give advice and feel great about myself. And then there was some light bulb moment came on one day where I said, well, I'm not doing them any favors. So I changed my approach from, well, how would you deal with that?
Yes.
And again, as soon as that happened, I started to see those leaders begin to flourish.
Yes.
And they eventually became my branch managers for my different branches around the country.
And again, I suppose one of the other biggest challenges, you know, again, with the Ironman sort of metaphor, that feeling that there's no way I can do this. There's no way I could swim 2.5 miles, run 26 miles and cycle 112 miles, not in that order, obviously. You know, so you have to, like, there's no way that my business can become a multi-million dollar business. You know, so I'm going to stay at this level because this is my, what they call it, cognitive dissonance, I think, isn't it?
Where you know, or even they just stay in their lane, they stay in their comfort zone.
But I suppose, give me an example. Do you have one sort of shining example of a company that you've helped, which literally you just were such a catalyst that they you made a monumental change to the business and the guy's life?
Yeah, I'm not giving any names away, but you know, I went into one company up in Fort Collins, and they were doing roughly 800,000 in revenue, and they were just, you know, fumbling away. They didn't have any direction, really struggling with cash flow. And I went in. I've been working with them for coming up 2 years. Last year, they're now nearly $3 million in revenue.
Yeah.
And this year, they're going to be close to $9 million. So just by building in a strategic plan, so I worked with them to get a plan 3 years out, 10 years out. We brought in the right leadership team, so we hired the right people. And then we got them involved in building and executing that strategic plan. So everybody's looking at the numbers. Everybody's looking at a scorecard. They now have the right marketing person. So that person is going out to the marketplace and using social media. So, I mean, they're just exploding. I think they'll be at probably 50 million within 5-6 years. So that's a tremendous example.
And now that you've got this sort of process, do you see yourself expanding and becoming, and forgive me if these are, you know, the wrong examples, but, you know, people like Brian Tracy and, you know, have been incredibly successful at building global training programs. Is it the Sanderson or the Sanders method, the sales method? Sandler method. There's some incredible success stories where these formulas have been identified and people teach them. So, you know, with this unique view that you have, with the experience that you have and the track record, do you see this becoming something that you could build and franchise and expand? You already have operations in the UK, but is that your plan, do you think?
Yeah, I definitely like to have a global presence. I'm not sure what that looks like yet in terms of whether it's franchising or just having some type of a license model. But I, you know, I've already had with calls with people in India and Asia and Australia. So I think people resonate with that, again, that mindset part.
Yes.
And when I start introducing, talking about rugby, start talking about an Ironman, people really relate to that really quickly. And I think that's how I differentiate myself from other coaches. You know, there's a lot of great coaches out there, but you know what I feel as though I bring to the table along with my Ironman side is just the fact that I've grown my business to such a big size.
Well, you've walked the walk, not only with the successful business that you've had. So you've got that, you know, okay, I'm not just one of those guys that, you know, hasn't quite done it, but you've done it, you've sold it, and you've got that incredible sort of sporting background where you cannot hide. You can't fake that.
Yeah,
you know, you can't.
That's true.
So that's the tremendous thing. So it sounds like this is a very exciting time where you've got that foundation, the momentum, the book, the uptick. So that's is it exciting times ahead for you?
It is, yeah. I want to keep pushing myself, not only, you know, physically. I mean, I've had a break from some of my races. You know, I had my twins. I moved my family across the country.
They probably like the weather.
Yeah, I mean,
Is it Glasgow to Phoenix? You know, it's slightly sun. I'm not sure if it's Glasgow, but it's a bit sunnier there, I think.
Oh, it was, I think the year before I moved out to the States, I think we had 2 weeks of good weather the whole year. It was just so depressing. And then I had a trip to Scottsdale, and the weather was incredible. You know, one part, the northern part of Arizona, they had the snow. The other part, I was mountain biking and skydiving. So I thought, well, life's too short. And then when I started to see how people lived across, especially Scottsdale, it's a second or third houses. And I thought, well, what are these people doing wrong? Or no, what are these people doing right compared to how I'm living my life? So pretty much within 6 months, I moved, I packed my two bags and
left a note on the fridge for your wife.
Yes, pretty much. but no, I mean, and that's, I think that's why I feel so passionate about now being in the privileged position to be able to help other people and share my experience and really tell people that, hey, you know, when I came across the States or when I first started my business, I had no idea where I was going to end up.
Well, that's, I think that's part of the fun of it, though, really, isn't it? If you knew, you know, none of
us. Yeah, that's true.
Anyway, so, I now have. We're going to move on. We're going to move on to the quick fire round.
Okay.
Now, so hopefully you got my email, and this isn't going to be a complete surprise to you. And if it is, even better.
I am prepared.
I've got 10 questions here. Hopefully you haven't prepared, you know, and I'm going to mix them all up. No. So my quick fire round, which I stole from James Lipton. So I'm not sure if I have to say that because there's probably, you know, as I changed four of the words.
Okay.
So, you know, he can't get me. Anyway, question number one, Robert Klinkenbeard, what is your favorite word?
Brilliant.
I concur. Number two, what is your least favorite word?
Can't.
Ah, yes. Yeah, same here. What are you most excited about right now?
I'm just really excited about the opportunities ahead of us. I mean, changing world right there. And I think there's a lot of acquisitions and business opportunities ahead with, you know, after coming out of COVID.
And number four, what turns you off right now?
You like this politics.
Oh, yes. No, same here. Yeah, it's like, for God's sake, you know, can we please talk about something else?
I know.
Number five, what sound or noise do you love?
I just love upbeat music. I have even like electronic trance music just to keep me going.
There's the energy in there, yes. And what sound or noise do you hate?
Unfortunately, I have to go to all the politicians' BS. Can't stand it.
Yeah, it's the sort of well-worn record, isn't it? Number seven, what is your favorite curse word?
It's three words, for fuck's sake.
It's great. I mean, it's, because it has a beginning, an end, and a punch in the middle. It's like, and you can spread it out for days.
Yeah. I love every time I hear it, it just cracks me up.
It is. I just hear that word so many times in so many different scenarios. It is a true gift to the English language.
Yeah.
Number eight. What profession other than your own would you like to attempt?
To be paid to travel the world, to be like a travel journalist.
You know, a bit like that guy from Monty Python.
Yeah. What was his name?
I'm sorry, if he's obviously listening, so he'll be furious at me.
No, but I just thought that was the best job ever, just to be able to travel, get paid for it, and experience the world.
And number nine, what profession would you not like to attempt?
Oh, I would hate to do accounting or CPA work.
Yes, desk job fashion. With one of those green visors that they have in the movies.
Sitting in a dark room and looking at numbers.
Yes, 9 to 5. Yeah. Number 10, last question. If heaven exists, what would you like to hear God say when you arrive at the pearly gates?
He would say, welcome. You've had a wild ride and live life to the full.
Fantastic. What a wonderful answer. Robert, it's been a humongous pleasure having you on the show. How do people get hold of you? How do people find out more about you? How do they get hold of your book? How do they learn about all of the things that you're up to?
Yeah, there's a couple of ways. They could email me at robert@theradixgroupllc.com. They could go to my website, theradixgroupllc.com. They can go to LinkedIn and check out Robert Klinkenbeard. And then for your listeners, I've got a special gift for them. If they want to text me the word Radix, R-A-D-I-X, to 33777. I'll send them a PDF copy of my book.
Oh, that's wonderful. Fantastic. Well, I'll make sure that all of that is on the notes so people will just be able to click and send. But thank you once again. It's been wonderful talking to you.
Yeah, no, thank you, Matthew. I really enjoyed today. I love talking to a fellow.
Go on, say it. I know, much as it pains you, as a Scotsman to say, you know.
Fellow Great Britain.
Yes.
Englishman.
Not European anymore, sadly.
No, not European. I think, that's definitely a sore subject for many.
Well, that may be another show. Yes. We'll do the politics next time.
Yes, absolutely.
Brilliant.
Well, thank you, Matthew.
Stay in touch.
Okay, cheers. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.